I'd like to read the prayer list for this week. Prayers for happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters. For all those killed by others or by their own hands. Kristen, Monica, Leroy Ward, Glenn Woodrick, Charlie the dog. Job search. Roseanne Barona, Travis Boone, Brian and Brandy, Joey Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Bruce Miller, Sarai, Greg Weaver, Joe Whitley. Prayers for health and well-being. Kyabji Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Venerable Lunda Tendron, Venerable Nawang Kando, Venerable Gelton Drokar, Venerable Cherki Lamo, Venerable Techen Drokar, Venerable Lobsang Khandro. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. Jerry Anderson and family. Jorge Aurelio, Jim Barnes, Luce and Narcissus Barona Sr., Bob, Susie Boehm, Yuki Burrows, John Castello, Betty Chow, Ted Domi, Tashi Doma, Ryan Edmonds, Mary Lou Flynn, Mildred Gooch, Tracy Haas Thompson, Kay Hansen, Christina Harrison, Annie Hassel, Kathy Hayashi, Frank Holt, Kenny Jackson Buddy, Dal and Sue Johnston, Barry Judge, Florence Kaplan, Helen Kasanoff, Jessica Kasanoff, Jonathan Kramer, Carrie L. Lang, Shantin Kurt Latimer, Nagio Lyles, Mary Lojek, Ina Lovelace, Robin Lynn, R.M., Georgia McDonald and family, Wilbert Martin, Martin Massenberg, Susan McClure, Jenny McCoy, Kathy McDonald family, Robert McGrath and family, Elvia Mahian family, Bruce Miller, Jason Miller, David Muller, Audrey Murphy, Stephanie Murphy, Evan Merlin family, Fran Nash, Jane Norton, Jessica Nunley, Marie Oliver, William Stover Oliver, Jay Pondia, Julie Cattell and her mother, Renee Reyna, Faye Renard, Ann Rivers, James Rowan and Teresa Creighton, Ariana Scott, Joanne Cease, Pooja Shah, Emily Smith, Nancy Sorbet, Lobsang Thopten, family of Leroy Ward, Dion Washington, Amy Weiss, Shay Wokowicki, Marguerite Young, Dorje and Kadro the pigs, and Raven the cat.
Good morning. I'm Donna Cease. I'm Spiritual Programs Coordinator at Kadampa Center. And we have a little bit of a disappointment this morning. But as with many disappointments, it's an opportunity to give us a whole different experience than we thought we were going to have. Geshe Gelick, our resident teacher, is not feeling well this morning, so he will not be here. But Robbie Watkins, who is the director of Kadampa Center and is he can speak very articulately about the Dharma at the drop of a hat, and so he's going to be leading us in a discussion, and he'll be with us momentarily. Thank you.
When I woke up this morning, my main concern was, what time is it, really? And I had no idea I'd be sitting up here in front of so many people, but welcome to Kadampa Center. Our regular teacher, Geshe Gelick, is not feeling well today, so he's not here today. I'm Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of the center since the early 90s, and I'll be leading the discussion in this place. Let's see. I know we have a lot of visitors. How many people are here for the very first time today?
More than
our. Okay, great. Yeah, all our regular people decided, got confused about the time, and then looked at the snow and decided to sleep in. So, yeah, so we just have the enthusiastic visitors, so welcome. So I guess, Donna, you'll be leading our prayers?
So if you will take the gold prayer book and turn to page 34, and if you don't have a gold prayer book, the white notebook, just turn to the page that has prayers. And on page 34, we will begin with the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra, which is on the, it's stuck in there above the, where it says daily prayers, right at the top of the page. And we'll recite that three times. Taya ta Mune, Mune, Maha Munaye Soha. Taya ta Mune, Mune, Maha munaye soha tayata omune mune maha munaye soha. And then skip down to the middle of the page, and we'll recite the four immeasurables in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then turn the page, and at the bottom of page 37, we'll chant the four immeasurables in Tibetan. Sem chen tam che de wa dong de wei dong de. Chant Chenrezig's mantra 8 times. Chenrezig is the Buddha of compassion. And Green Tara's mantra 7 times. And Green Tara is the Buddha of enlightened activity. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 And the children can go to their classes now.
So what am I supposed to do now?
It's always good to
show you. Yeah. Oh, here, Susan Potter, what were you going to teach on this morning? Yeah.
What do you think happened, though?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, we'll begin. Actually, it's a good thing to start with some meditation. So let's begin with some meditation. How many people here have never meditated before? Okay, a fair number. In the Tibetan tradition, meditation is a way of training our mind. It's not about spacing out or going blank. It's actually about becoming much more focused and concentrated. The Tibetan word for meditation is gom, G-O-N. This room that we're in, we call the gompa, the room for meditation. And the technical definition is becoming familiar with. And really means becoming familiar with your own mind. So it's a process of placing your mind on a chosen object and observing what your mind does and how it reacts to it and how it interacts to it. So it's a way of frequently referred to as training our mind. Again, it's not spacing out or going blank or going to a space of no thoughts. That's not what meditation in the Tibetan tradition is about. Ultimately, it's a tool that we use to develop our qualities of wisdom, which means understanding of reality, and compassion, the wish that others be free of suffering. So meditation is not the end in and of itself. It's a tool that we use to train our mind and develop those positive qualities of mind that make us happy. Okay, so first thing to do, if you want to do some official Tibetan-approved meditation, is to check your posture. If you're sitting on the floor, it's good to sit to the front of the cushion so your pelvis is a little bit open. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean back in the chair, but sit where your back is straight. Your feet are on the floor. It's fine to put a cushion underneath your feet if you find that more comfortable. Your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigidly so, but it said it's a regal or king-like posture. So your back is a little bit stretched out. Your head is straight on your shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes are either lightly closed or just very slightly open, so a little bit of light comes in. Jaw is relaxed with your lips closed, not clenched tight. So the best place for the tongue is on the ridge of the gums above the upper teeth. That keeps us from drooling while we're meditating, which isn't considered to be cool in the Tibetan tradition. Our shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is open. Our upper arms are away from our torso, so some air can move in and out. Our hands are with our right hand on top of the left, with the thumbs touching slightly below the navel. Or we can put one hand on each knee. Either position is fine. And then people always get bent out of shape about their legs, what to do with their legs. If you're sitting in a chair, it's a little bit easier. If you're on a cushion, they can be crossed, half-crossed, any position that you find comfortable and stable. And the whole point of the posture is not that it be uncomfortable or that you be torturing yourself, but it's a stable posture that you can establish at the beginning of the meditation, so that it becomes non-distracting and you don't have to pay attention to it. So just check your posture going from the head on down. If you find any sources of tension or discomfort, address them now and wiggle them out and adjust the posture so it's something that you can maintain through the meditation that we're getting ready to do. And having established the posture, we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath, so our diaphragm is pulled down, and then the stomach contracts on the out-breath. So do that three times. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we begin every meditation by establishing our motivation, our reason for doing the meditation. And any motivation that we bring to this is fine. If we're just curious, that's great. If we think it'll make us a little bit more calm, a little bit more relaxed, wonderful. If we think that meditation will help us deal with our family, our friends, our co-workers, great. But it says that the most powerful motivation, the one that gives the most benefit to our meditation, is what's referred to as the bodhisattva. The motivation of the bodhisattva, or bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment. And this is the wish to become enlightened, to completely develop our qualities of wisdom and compassion for the benefit of others, so that everything we do is motivated by the wish to be of benefit to others. Even something as simple as the short meditation to follow, we think, I am doing this meditation so that I can be of greater benefit to others. So let's take a moment and see if we can, even if it doesn't come naturally, if it takes effort, if we can generate the bodhicitta motivation. And having set our motivation, we can begin the actual meditation. And we're going to do a simple concentration meditation, just paying attention to the breath, the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils, the physical sensation of the air coming in and going out. We place our concentration on that and on nothing else. And every time that we notice our concentration has wandered off to thinking about what we need to do when we leave the center, or what happened last night, or what's going to happen tomorrow morning, or some nice dream we had, or whatever, we just drop that and bring our concentration back to the breath, over and over and over again. Always bringing the concentration back to the breath, the physical sensation of breath moving in and out through our nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Very simple, but not easy. We're training our mind to become more concentrated. We're not thinking about the breath. We're not describing it. We're not visualizing it. The mind is on the physical sensation of breath moving in and out through our nostrils. No dichotomy. Mind and breath are the same. Cannot be subdivided or separated. Again, always coming back to the breath. Any distractions, any sounds, any physical sensations, memories, ideas, plans, just set them aside. Bring the concentration back to the breath. That's the process of meditation. Over and over, coming back to the breath. And just as we always begin our meditation with a motivation, we always end with what we call a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit unusual, something virtuous. We give ourselves a pat on the back and think, may the positive imprints created by this meditation not be wasted, not be dispersed, but may they ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. Even such a small seed as just sitting for 10 minutes and watching our breath can create incredible positive results in the future, so we can rejoice in that. And you can relax your concentration now. So we're going to have a discussion now, and the operative word is discussion. I'm very comfortable sitting up here for long periods of silence if nobody wants to contribute to the discussion. That doesn't bother me in the least. One rule is that we are being simulcast to countless millions of people around the world. So if you want to make a comment, please wait till the mic is given to you. Yeah, so the we'll be passing those around. Were you here last week, Don? I was not here last Sunday. Do you know what Geshe Gelug talked about? Can you remember?
He answered a couple of questions.
Okay.
Well, it was mostly about meditation.
Yeah.
And then he answered things about
meditation.
It was how to deal with when someone's angry at you.
How to deal when someone's angry at you, yeah. So I was... Okay, so I think the idea this morning was to continue the discussion on anger. That's always a big issue, and particularly when there's a lot of political hubbub going on, there's a lot of anger that arises. I think first we need to define our terms. What is anger? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Yeah, right behind, Donna, right behind you, this one. And we have our two. Carol Merrill will be passing the mic.
To some extent, an unrealistic inflation of, or blowing something out of proportion of, like how bad it actually is.
Okay, so it's unrealistic. Yeah, that's a very important part of the definition. Yeah.
Attachment. So attachment to expectations, attachment to losing something we want or not getting something that we want.
Okay, yeah, thwarted attachment. Mm-hmm.
I think one definition of anger is attachment that doesn't get what it wants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or an exaggeration of negative qualities.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it could also be viewed, anger and stress, as manifestations of a lack of space in terms of space as it relates to knowledge of impermanence. Just mm-hmm. as you can't focus and concentrate if you have so many things in a room and so many boxes and you get distracted, it makes you frustrated and angry. If you have no personal space within yourself, If you lack an understanding of it, it can manifest as anger, frustration, from a Salung perspective.
Okay.
So anger is one manifestation of a lack of space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
I'd like to say that for me, anger has been shown through, I like the term lack of faith, but with the lack of faith comes a fear of the unknown, a fear of not having something, a fear of having something, just a fear and not dealing with it properly, and then anger for me will manifest itself out of that fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. We have a lot of people who want comments. Somehow this topic, I guess we have some people. Who has experience with anger? Yeah. Who's ever felt angry? Okay. Yeah. And keep going. Yeah, this is great.
I was going to say, I think for me, a lot of times it's kind of misinterpretation of feelings that sometimes arise from hurt internal feelings that then transform into anger and frustration, and then just not always seeing one side of the story and not recognizing that there may be the other half of the
equation. That's a very Buddhist point of view. Yeah, thank you. Let's see. Yeah. Roy, let's see back here.
I guess if you're going to say something that contributes to it, I mean, obviously the not meeting of expectations, but also lack of control over any situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest thing. If you think you can fix it, you don't get angry at it. If you can't fix it, you get angry.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's an emotion. I'm sorry. It's an emotion that emerges out of a frustration of not being able to do something about something that you disagree. Mm-hmm. And it's also the emotion that comes out of something that you are in complete disagreement that is happening in the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to say that, to me, I wonder, why does anger exist? All emotions have a reason to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not saying that we should all be angry people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that is good. But I am of the opinion that if emotion that emotion exists, it must be for a reason. And sometimes anger can actually produce a positive result.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute.
When it comes from the right source.
Mm-hmm.
Like compassion, for example, it's not, you see that the trees are being destroyed or something, this is my issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, or animals, you get angry at what is happening and then you do something, propels you to do something.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get into that as the discussion progresses. Let's see, back here, yeah.
I like what she said because it reminded me of a quote from Engaging in the Conduct of Bodhisattvas. Furthermore, suffering has good qualities, and anger could definitely be considered a contributing cause toward as well as a result of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Through being disheartened with it, arrogance is dispelled. Compassion arises for those in cyclic existence. Evil is shunned, and joy is found in virtue. So, according to Conduct of Bodhisattvas, even something like anger, as she says, would definitely have qualities that could turn one's mind towards Dharma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I could be wrong because it might contradict what some other people had said, but I think that anger is a reaction to a deeper kind of pain that I think it arises out of that, but I think it's a deceptive emotion. I think that anger kind of masks the pain by making you feel empowered and that you can assert power over the situation, and it kind of like boosts the ego. So I think it's kind of deception.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you to elaborate on deception? That's an interesting word.
I think that when reaction out of anger is going to be a wrong reaction, that it's not going to really produce the results. If you could really analyze where the anger is coming from, what kind of pain it is, maybe it's sadness, maybe it's a feeling of injustice, I think there could be a different kind of reaction that could be more compassionate that might result in actually what the outcome that you desire is, if you were to look at it more closely.
Okay.
And actually acting out of anger is like more impulsive because it's not really something that it kind of overrides the part of the mind where you're really thinking about what you're doing, and you're just kind of takes control. I think it's that's about it.
Okay, thank you.
Well, most people in a daily life, they see the individual emotional response. From a lifestyle that I had, traveling and background and jobs, that I've noticed has been used for negative and positive. That has expanded from individual to groups. So there's times where it can be very scary when it escalates from one individual where you can convince a large group.
Okay. A lot of great comments. Thank you, everyone. the official Buddhist definition of anger is the wish to harm someone else. Okay? It's that emotion, it has that emotional quality, as people said, but it's either physically, emotionally, financially, in a relationship, but the wish to harm someone else is how anger is defined. And it's considered a negative emotion. Okay, some people have mentioned that there may be positive aspects to anger, but it's generally considered to be a negative emotion. Why is it considered negative? Because it causes unhappiness. Unhappiness for the person who is angry. Okay, we may be able to get a short emotional charge, but anger causes us to be unhappy. If we're continuously angry, we're not happy. There's a wonderful metaphor said anger is like reaching into a hot fire and grabbing a coal to throw at the person you're angry at. Now, whether you're going to hurt them or not, you have no idea, but you can be sure it will hurt yourself. And it's actually said that anger can destroy the positive karma that we've accumulated. If we're card-carrying Buddhists, we believe in the law of karma, that all our actions of body, speech, and mind have results in the future. Those that are motivated by compassion, love, kindness, will result in our happiness in the future. Those that are motivated by attachment, which people have talked about, by anger, by ignorance, will result in our suffering in the future. And it said that being angry actually destroys the good karma that we've accumulated. So generally, anger is considered something that's not real good from the Buddhist point of view. But I want to throw that open for discussion. Is anger ever beneficial? Is there anything we do out of anger that couldn't be done out of another motivation, for example? Or do we have to get angry certain times to act?
A few weeks ago, similar topic came up, and the Sunday morning session got really intense, I feel like. But Tony, who's not here this morning, mm-hmm. said something that I liked very much, and it's similar to what was just said about it could be deceiving. But it was largely to the effect of, as you feel that anger come up, and it could be because of lost expectations, attachment to something, something's infringing on your personal space, any one of those things, I don't know if we don't give ourselves enough. If we take for granted ourselves and how complex we can be, but it's never as simple as just like I am angry. It is often a multitude of things, and so it could be, you know, that out of compassion for the animals and the trees or whatever. It could be out of, you know, trying to make yourself right, or you expect your child to grow up and be great, and now they're hurting somebody, and you're angry because they're hurting somebody else. It's usually a great many emotions at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and the anger is just that impulse that makes it turn into a grease fire.
Mm-hmm.
But by taking just a minute and identifying those different things of like why it is that grease fire happened because of all those different emotions that are happening, then you start to have a chance to unwind it and have mm-hmm. any benefit out of that anger. You didn't actually take advantage of the impulse. You took advantage of the opportunity that it arose. Mm-hmm. And you took advantage of the opportunity to try and unwind it. And that opportunity is the benefit. Mm-hmm. It's not saying, I am angry, I will charge out the door and, you know, do something to my kid because they hurt somebody. The benefit is taking advantage of the opportunity mm-hmm. that it came up.
So if we notice, become aware that we're angry about something, that's a warning sign or a signal that we need to look at this more closely and find out what's really going on, that there's a lot more going on. It's kind of, hey, pay attention to this. Okay. Let's go with Royden.
Yeah. In my experience with public health, a lot of times populations need to change whatever dynamic we're trying to get to. And it's, I've seen that it's very important to be changing with a hopeful or positive intention.
Mm-hmm.
And the marketers and people who are trying to elucidate this change stress that it is important not to do so through fear, whether it's fear of Ebola or fear in general, to do mm-hmm. so with hope and positive intentions. And I've also found in my recent experience in conservation the same thing. Don't stress, the marketers say, don't stress the negative that the species is going extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Stress the positive and the hopeful that we are doing something very positive and use that as a motivation. So I've seen that stressed in other areas outside of Buddhism as, mm-hmm. as important intentions.
Okay. Yeah.
I live in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And, of course, one of the major problems in our state is we're basically an extraction colony, most succinct way I can put it. And speaking in terms of in intention, about 5 or 6 miles from where we live in the capital city of Charleston is Kanawha State Forest. And they had plans to build a mountaintop removal mine, which would have put it perilously close to the community of Loudondale, which is right on the outskirts of the forest, right mm-hmm. on the boundary edge. And we have a couple of friends who live there. And, of course, one of the problems that people who don't live near a strip mine or are unfamiliar with the environment of a strip mine is the vast amounts of water, soil, and air pollution which result. And this is one of the reasons West Virginia has such a high rate of cancer and problems with fertility, birth defects, etc. And if you look at the history of the southern part of the state, it's rife. And the people in the community of Loudondale were justifiably very upset because the bill and all the paperwork to put through that would have permitted this mine was done without really allowing any sort of period of public comment.
Mm-hmm.
And this directly impacts these people's well water. These people in Loudondale are all on a well system. They don't get city water. They get well water.
Mm-hmm.
Strip mine is poison and puts toxins into that water. So these people would have been subjected to higher levels of selenium, lead, other harmful minerals and compounds that are a normal part of the runoff. But rather than get angry mm-hmm. and storm the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
they turned their frustration around and they formed a coalition which worked with the local government that was opposed to it for various reasons to prevent the mine. And the way they did it is they formed a watchdog group in connection with the Department of Environmental Protection. And they monitored their water. They monitored the soil. And at the first sign of a violation, they went through the proper channels.
Mm-hmm.
And then the violations would be cited. The company would eventually, the mine got shut down because there were mountains of violations.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that instance, this was an instance of people who were living in a community looking at very direct consequences that are normally associated with life in the southern part of the state. For this to happen so close to the Capitol was frightening. These are people, they're not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they took their anger and they took their frustration, and rather than go on the attack, they mm-hmm. transmuted it
mm-hmm.
and they turned it into fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Because their goal was, if we allow this, it's not just going to impact us. The wind will carry it into Charleston. It'll pollute the Kanawha River because Davis Creek is a tributary of the Kanawha River.
Mm-hmm.
It'll end up poisoning an entire area, and the company that owned the mine lived in Korea. The owners of it are in Korea. They don't even live here. They wouldn't have to deal firsthand with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they went through the proper channels, and in doing so, they did it in accordance with law. So nobody got beaten up. Nobody got hurt. There were no death threats. There were mm-hmm. there was no destruction of equipment. They handled it in such a way that they took that, and they used it as a fuel to engage in a more compassionate form of resistance that yielded a more positive result than mm-hmm. just going and screaming in a representative's mm-hmm. office.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Let's go back over here. Okay, I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My one thing, there's that saying, I most hate in others what I don't like about myself.
Uh-huh.
So if I get angry at somebody for something they do, if I use that then to look at myself and say, how does this behavior manifest itself in my behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm was driving down the road the other day, and this guy was tailgating. This jerk was tailgating me, and I couldn't do anything about it because this moron was right in front of me driving wicked slow, you know. So I mean, if I look at my behavior, if I get angry at somebody, and then I use that to then reflect on my behavior, what I do, is that something I do, and I'm just, mm-hmm. you know, projecting that more onto that person,
mm-hmm.
and then how can I change my behavior because of what I see, you know, that fired me up.
Okay.
I think that we have to, when we get angry, we need to identify where is the source coming from, where is my anger coming from.
Mm-hmm.
If it is just only for somebody who, just as the gentleman was saying, you know, somebody cut me off in traffic or something like that, it's a different story. Mm-hmm. But if you see that somebody is causing harm to somebody that is innocent, in my case, my issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, the environment, animals, trees, then the next thing that I need to ask myself is a peaceful approach going to be effective?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are sometimes there is no time for you to have a peaceful approach.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when they were about to cut my trees,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I had gotten into discussion in a very nice way, et cetera, these people were not willing to do that. I mm-hmm. know the people. So the only way that I could do this is by really real intimidation
mm-hmm.
and real anger. And so it worked. And they did not cut my trees. And they did not cut other
trees.
Was it
real anger or was it, again, this is an important point, we can have a wrathful aspect without the mind of anger.
No, no, I was
compassion.
Really angry.
Yeah, okay, in this instance.
Oh, no. The words that I said
yes.
were really angry.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Oh, no.
But anger is the mental state, okay?
Yes, exactly.
We can be wrathful
exactly.
without out of compassion, I think.
Correct. No, I had no okay. compassion for them.
Yeah.
None.
Okay.
So, but, okay. So it depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, though, maybe it would have worked some other way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some times that it is so... the event happens mm-hmm. so fast
yeah.
that's the only way that you can deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or with when I, for example, found a dog that was mm-hmm. had been abused for 2 years, and then I said to myself, really? Well, if I call the authorities are not going to do anything about it. I know this because mm-hmm. I tried to do this, you know. So to call the authorities and they would not do anything. The Humane Society won't do anything. Nobody will do anything. So then I'm saying to myself, really? And I'm going to watch this dog mm-hmm. being tortured for another 2 years or who knows how many? No, it ain't happening. So I went and I confiscated the dog. Mm-hmm. In other words, I stole the dog. Now the dog is mine and the dog mm-hmm. is doing fine. So that was done out of anger.
Mm-hmm.
What did I do? I left a paper in the name of the dog. Dog mm-hmm. wrote a paper to the man. He said what he thought about the man.
Yeah.
That was angry, very mm-hmm. angry.
Yeah.
It worked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a comment.
Yes.
So I think to speak to that, the point is that there's never a time, even though it's like it's in the moment, something's really dangerous or scary. If it's dangerous and it's a child, we all know screaming at the child that's running in the road is wrathful. But it's just more important to have a mind of compassion because it's about countless lifetimes. So whatever we practice, we get better at. And it's hard to say. I mean, it's difficult to say that, but whatever we practice, we get better at. So if I practice anger, I'm going to get better and better at it. And there's always another way. I'm just going to challenge you with it.
It's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we can always do the same actions with a different motivation. Yeah, and this is not to criticize you. I mean, for where most of us are, anger can motivate us to do beneficial actions. But I think the Buddhist point of view would be that in terms of our own karma and future happiness, if we could do those, and there was some of this there, you're acting out of compassion also.
Right. And
yeah.
At that point, I was thinking, hell with my karma.
Yeah, uh-huh, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's primarily compassion. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was very angry.
Yeah.
I
mm-hmm.
bad,
yeah, uh-huh.
But I liked it. You know, that's some kind of masochism.
Well, no, anger can, we do get a charge from it sometimes, yeah.
There's,
It kind of it justifies our sense of who we are. You know, I'm right, they're wrong, and I can give you all these reasons. And we it reinforces that concept of the self or the ego. That's why we find it kind of enjoyable. Yeah, Joey? Joey never gets angry, so I don't know what he has to he has nothing to contribute.
No. That's the wrong statement. I do get angry. It does flare up. It's more under the water, though. But the thing that I kind of realized is, for me, is that when I'm angry, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot have anger and happiness at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what we're striving for is to be happy. So if we're striving to be happy, we want to use methods that will cause that. And then that kind of preludes, you know, anger. You know, don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that you can have a wrathful appearance and, mm-hmm. and out of compassion.
Yeah.
And be firm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to be angry and be happy, it's to me an impossibility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for the sake of my mind, for the sake of a happy mind and undisturbed mind, I try not to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do, you know, I understand that I'm human, you know, and I'm practicing and I'll try to do better the next time.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, and the Buddha talks about that. You know, anger has this quality of being so pervasive that there's no room in our mind for thoughts of compassion. Even if we're initially motivated by compassion for the dog, when anger arises, it's just this fire. And, you know, we just get absorbed by it, and there's no room for compassion or love or wisdom. That's the really negative aspect of anger, the mental quality of anger, according to the Buddha, that it just leaves no, you know, it's just a brush fire that leaves nothing in its path. You know, it just, and I mean, you know, we can all think of countless examples where when we've acted out of just impulsive anger, and then later we say, oh God, I can't believe I did that. You know, I wish I hadn't done that. But in the moment, you know, we just don't, we lose that perspective on what we're doing. I think we had, let's see, we got lots of hands going up. Got a very angry crowd this morning. Yeah.
To me, like you said, for me, anger is very, like, impulsive. And mm-hmm. especially with, like, young children, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a reaction to sort of their behavior, I guess. I mean, I don't know what it is, but trying to control it is hard because it comes on so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's again, the Buddhist point of view is it arises so easily because, as I think Jill said, is because we've done it in the past. We've trained ourselves to get angry. We've developed the habit of getting angry. And every time we get angry, we're creating the cause to get angry again in the future.
There's a time-honored maxim that says, when you're angry, before you speak or act, count to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our teachers long ago explained why does that work?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because when you count to 10, or if you count your breaths or whatever, it brings you to a neutral mind. And from a neutral mind, it helps you to go more toward a positive mind, or at mm-hmm. least a more balanced mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we act impulsively out of anger, it's out of a hyper-focus on the negative or the fear or whatever. And if we could just at least take that count of 10 to come closer back to neutral, we can have a more balanced view and hopefully speak or act more appropriately mm-hmm. or effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
That's
okay. Okay.
I have
okay.
a question, I guess. So anger is considered a negative emotion because it leads to unhappiness.
Right.
To what extent is happiness the goal? Is not unhappiness, you know, natural, and to what extent is that embraceable? as a normal part of life, and anger being something that can spur pursuit towards another goal, something larger, social justice, which in one sense is happiness for everybody, but to what extent is unhappiness not normal?
Unhappiness is certainly normal, and it's definitely part of the human condition, as the Buddha saw it. By virtue of being human, we are going to experience happiness. If you ever go to a teaching by the Dalai Lama, he always starts off his teachings, or almost always, by saying, everyone wants to be happy. Okay? It's a natural instinct we all have, and it's not selfish, and it's not something to be criticized. We aspire to happiness. Okay? And the Buddhist point of view is that complete happiness is possible, okay, but mainly by creating the karma to be happy and not creating the karma to be unhappy. So the Buddha didn't say you have to be happy. He's just saying you have a choice. You can, if you like being unhappy, go at it. But if you want to become happy, these are the things to do, one of which is to avoid anger, okay? But it's a choice each of us has, and we have to look at it, you know, for ourselves. If you'd rather be unhappy, the Buddha said, that's fine, go at it, okay? But if you want to be happy, this is what I've learned by looking at my mind and follow these steps. Does that address what you're asking at all?
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand. Yeah. This is my first experience.
Yeah, you're asking a very profound question.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That I was just thinking about how unhappiness, temporary, is normal.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah, it's definitely part of all our existence. Yeah, and we can't deny it. Certainly. Okay, over here. So can you hold the mic a little closer? Yeah. You have to hold it pretty close. Yeah.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Thank you.
You know, to me, I think anger's wrapped up in a lot of emotions, in pain, in anger, in frustration, and a lot of things. And, you know, as an example, you know, someone that may have had like physical or mental abuse at some point in their lives, and you're trying to figure out a way to take that pain away, take that anger away, to get to a better level, but it's really, really hard to do because it's a hurtful situation. You know, whether you're at an extreme level of anger, whether you're at an extreme level of pain or somewhere in between, it takes a good control of you, you know, I think, and to count to 10 sometimes might not work. And I guess the question would be, you know, when you have extreme circumstances that cause that level of pain or anger or whatever you want to call it, how do you get to a better mind so that, because obviously that's very consuming. It, you know, it's, I always say it's a waste of time to hate someone and things like that, but it's hard when you're in that moment of pain and anxiety.
Yeah. Let's give the mic to people who haven't spoken, okay? Yeah, because we have so many people who want to talk, which is making my job very easy this morning.
I want to start with a little story, a true story. A couple of weeks ago, I went to a vigil in Tar Heel, North Carolina. And for those of you who are not aware, it's the biggest pig slaughterhouse in the world. Mm. 30-some thousand sentient beings are slaughtered there daily. So let that sit with you for a second. So at this vigil I went to, we stood at this street corner where the trucks would stop. And the sentient beings would look at us. And they would make their little pig noises. And the truck would go on. Then another truck would come. Sentient beings look at us, make their noises, move on. Mm-hmm. This goes on over and over and over and over again. So here, I guess, I have a couple of questions related to that. So when I look at these sentient beings, and I see this world that we live in that's totally, for the most part, generally speaking, oblivious and blind to this, and even contributing to this horrendous act, keeping it alive even. Because if there's no demand there for that, mm-hmm. it will not continue. If there's a demand there for that, it will continue. So here's my question. Should I be happy about that?
Mm-hmm.
And if it shouldn't, if the appropriate reaction from a Buddhist perspective is not anger, what is? Because that's sort of mass torture,
mm-hmm.
and this industry that brings unhappiness to so many beings.
Mm-hmm.
What is the appropriate response? Because me, I do not want to put my head in the sand and act like everything's jolly and great, because mm-hmm. it's not.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be in denial about that. But I do want to be happy, too.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance all of those incredibly intense emotions and carry that inside of your being?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I'm just, you know, the answer, according to the text, would be the appropriate response is compassion, okay? That these sentient beings not experience suffering. And we had a wonderful teacher who came here a long time ago, and he said, and I think about this all the time, because it's sometimes we think compassion can make us unhappy. He said, the more compassionate you are, the happier you are. But actions out of compassion, as we talked about earlier, could be very fierce and wrathful, but they're motivated by compassion, not by anger, not by the wish to inflict harm on others who are harming others, but the wish that compassion both for the pigs and compassion, this is the Buddha talked about this, compassion for the people who are creating the incredible negative karma of killing 30,000 beings every day. I mean, I'm just giving you the ideal situation, you know. I'm not saying I'd see that and react with compassion, but that's what the text teaches. Yeah. But great, thank you for bringing that up.
I know that when I look back over my life at the times that I've been angry, mm-hmm. which have been more than I would like to admit, mm-hmm. but I can honestly say that most of the actions that I've made as a result of anger, I've regretted.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't tend to work out very well.
Yeah.
And I think that, and listen, this has been an interesting conversation, but I think, to further your point that you just made, that you know, being angry and being motivated to fix an injustice, you know, they can be exclusive. In other words, it doesn't, to not be angry doesn't mean that you're required to lay down mm-hmm. and just take it and accept it
mm-hmm.
or right. stick your head in the sand. Mm-hmm. You know, that if I see something out there that's wrong that I want to do something about, again, I agree. If I can change my mindset to coming from a place of compassion instead of a place coming anger, instead of coming from anger, that I can still be motivated to do the proper actions that I feel, you know, need to be done. It's just that, I mean, for me, when I'm angry, and we're really talking about the definition, I think, of anger, but it's when I've lost control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am fixated on something that is some external that's outside of me that I can't control, and it just really bothers me, and it makes me do impulsive actions,
mm-hmm.
and my impulses don't have a terribly great track record. And but that's all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Well, let's hear from people who haven't spoken. Yeah, we got a lot of.
I have begun to learn that often when I'm angry, it's because I'm not recognizing that what I perceive as my reality is not the same as what another person
is experiencing. Now you're talking about the antidote. How do we deal with anger? Yes.
And
yes.
And
this is very important.
I come to the world with a whole pattern of behaviors and learnings from parents and grandparents and patterns and addictions and prejudices that determine in many ways how I'm going to react to a particular situation. And sometimes I can catch that reaction and say, oh, this isn't real to the other person, mm-hmm. or this isn't the real way it's happening. This is the overlay that I'm bringing to a reality, and maybe if I look at that perspective that I'm bringing to the situation, the anger is not necessary. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I need to be angry mm-hmm. in order to relieve some pressure or some mission that I think I have to be living. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of interesting now to look at the world in terms of the illusion and delusion mm-hmm. that I put on things.
Yeah.
And it helps a lot.
Yeah. Let's move the discussion towards, okay, we're angry. We know that. We don't like what's going on politically or this. How do we deal with that? As good card-carrying Buddhists, what do we do with our anger? Yeah.
Okay, I was just going to say, yeah, we've pretty much determined that, you know, having a wrathful visage and doing actions that could be considered angry, at the same time recognizing that we want to maintain a motivation of compassion. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do we do mm-hmm. that? Because it's very tricky, mm-hmm. okay? I would offer that for me, one of the most effective ways that I have been able to inch towards this is through...
Let me just give an introduction. This is what we call in Buddhism thought transformation. These teachings, when we know we're angry, how do we deal with it, okay? It's arisen, okay? It's a fact. We're angry. This is called thought transformation, Lojong, which is a huge group of teachings. You know, the ultimate goal is to not get angry at all, but we're not there yet. So for those of us who are still getting angry, what do we do with it?
Okay.
And Kim's going to give us the answer.
Okay, let's move away from that thought.
Yeah.
I'm saying for me, one of the most effective ways has been meditation. Mm-hmm. And it seems the polar opposite of anger. Mm-hmm. But for me, it has allowed me to become a more centered person so that when the situations arise that I have compassion for another, for an abused child, let's say, I am able to analyze the fact that that brings up compassion and anger. If I want to truly do something out of compassion, I'm going to have to probably strategize a way to do that, okay, instead of impulsively acting. But in order to be able to strategize an effective way to make perhaps that suffering less out of a motivation of compassion, I have to figure out a way to do at every step of that plan to keep myself centered on the compassionate motivation. That means every time I think about it, I have to be able to maintain a compassionate motivation, mm-hmm. which means every time the anger comes up, I have to be able to step back and analyze. And being able to do that has been, the meditation has been an incredible tool to be able to come to that point. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is that the way to do that is to practice it over and over and over again. And I think for me, it has found that at those moments of anger, then the mind that I'm trying to transform, as our teacher Robbie said today, mm-hmm. the mind I'm trying to transform is more malleable and calmer to be able to do that count to 10, to slow down just a little bit to see the anger and stay with the motivation of compassion.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point of meditation. You know, the meditation, it's useful in and of itself, but it's to develop those tools that we can take with us when we're off the cushion and we're out in the rest. Yeah, exactly. Driving down the road, and we got someone tailgating us and someone in front of us. So we use the tools that we've developed in our meditation. Yeah, thank you, Kim. Okay.
I think the scariest part about anger for me is that when I'm angry, I want to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily realize that at first, but when you do, it makes anger not something that was given to you by somebody, but something that's sort of a choice internally. Doesn't mean I can get rid of it, but at least I know that it's that I'm angry because I want to be angry, and then it makes it easier to let it go if I want to then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's something that I was just going to say John Landau said. If I was handing you something and you didn't receive it and I keep going, here you go, and you go, no, thank you. So whose is it? If I've got a pie in my hand, whose is it? Is it hers or is it mine? So it's mine because I'm holding it. And so if I'm yelling at you and yelling at you, whose anger is it? And it's so hard to remember that if you could just look at me with compassion and see that I'm the one that's suffering, you don't have to suffer. And so the choice is so critical. So if you could just look at me, not patronizingly, but with compassion, that you always have a choice. So don't rise up in anger with me. Just hold that space and just be, you know, right there. And then mine, whatever I'm going to do is my dance.
You had mine.
I think anger is, it comes out of like expectations.
Mm-hmm. And, we talked about that earlier.
The trying to control things that are out of our control. And what's worked for me is just like patience.
That,
with time.
That's what Shanti Deva says.
Yeah.
The antidote to anger is patience. Yeah. You want to elaborate on it? Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Did you want to say more?
That's it.
Okay.
I think one of the things that has struck me as interesting, I went through a Buddhist lesson on shame, and they were saying how shame is a positive emotion because it makes it so you don't want to feel that again, and so you don't repeat that action. And I think that's echoed through anger in the same regard, where it could be a positive thing because you have these emotions and you don't want to essentially feel them again, and so it can be used as a tool in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then just to add to take your time with it, I think distraction for me is kind of the key to anger. To instead of 10 seconds, you give yourself like 24 hours if you're going to go through like a breakup or you just got fired or something. Instead of really like putting yourself into that anger, to just put it on the side and then like come back to it when you're cooled down, and then you can kind of look at it objectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think what I kind of hear, I hear the same thing in what everyone says, and when I look around the room, I see pictures of, you know, all the Buddhas and the teachers smiling, and I think the big way to avoid anger, there's this saying I heard years ago about if you want to learn something, you have to empty your cup. Empty your cup, like your mind. Mm-hmm. You can't, if you're already full, how are you going to pour more liquid in the cup? That's sort of like an old Chinese thing that they'd say. And I kind of look at this and I go, well, if your cup is empty and you're walking around, it's real easy to fill it with anger. It like you said, it comes easily. It comes natural. So fill it with happiness. If it's already filled with happiness, there's no room for anger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, it's not burying your head in the sand. It's not anything like that. But you see all of these people smiling. They have no room for anger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just have no room for it. So fill your mind, your heart, whatever you want to call it, with happiness before you leave every day, whether that's through meditation or through patience or whatever it takes. If you fill it with that first, there's no place for the anger. Mm-hmm. The anger never happens because you're already full and your mind is already there.
Yeah.
So that's the way I guess I see it.
Yeah. I think we've all met people, those rare creatures who go through life and never have an enemy, can't see an enemy. they have a mind that cannot perceive another person as enemy. And that's, you know, that's some, that's wonderful. Yeah, most of us aren't there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we're going to wind things down. But what is the ultimate cure to or way to deal with our anger according to the Buddha? Say, we don't like the political situation. What is the ultimate response to that according to the Buddha? Patience, and even beyond that?
Compassion,
yeah. And the ultimate response is an understanding of karma and a realization that everything we experience, even the political situation, the world situation, everything that really gets our goat, the guy who's tailgating us, is the result of our own karma. The reason we are experiencing the government we have is that we have created the karma in the past to experience that government. It's not random. We're not victims. This, everything that we experience is a result of our karma. And if we don't like what we're experiencing, the answer is not to get angry at the karma that we've caused, but to change our karma, not to create the causes to experience that in the future. Okay? We realize that the person who's tailgating us, that in effect is the result of our karma. And it's silly to get angry at them. We should get angry, if we're going to get angry, we should get angry at ourselves for having created that karma. I mean, they're just the innocent result of our own karma. If we don't like being tailgated, stop creating the karma to be tailgated, okay? Because you'll never get rid of all the tailgaters otherwise, yeah. That's the only way to do it, is to create the karma to live in a world without tailgaters, okay? So just, that's hard to that's hard to realize. But I just thought I ought to put that in. The ultimate response to anger is to realize that everything that pisses us off, in a way, our mind has created it. So don't get angry at the results of our mind. Use that, deal with your mind. And that's the way to, ultimate way to deal with anger.
But how can we create it? I didn't create that mailing pattern. I went to work for Hillary Clinton. I did everything that I could. So how can it be I didn't?
At some point in the past, according to the Buddha, I'm giving you, you created the karma to live in a world where Donald Trump is president. You're not the innocent victim. Yeah. So we should all be angry at you. Yeah, you're the one, you're the cause. No. That's a very heavy thought, but yeah, I just want to put that out there for people to think about. And I think with that, we'll wind things up, and let's see. I know we have a lot of visitors today. Where are you all from? Athens. Okay, great. Glad to have you here. Please feel free to look around and walk around after we finish in here, which we're getting ready to do.
Okay. We have a new member orientation. It'll be here in the Gompa, I think, after we're done here. I know it'll be after we're done here.
Okay.
I think it's in the Gompa. And we'll be reciting the dedication verses on pages 246 and 247. And just in case there are Trump supporters who are very happy with this government, we'll just remember that...
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They created the causes to live in a country where Barack Obama was president for the last 8 years. So all of us get our turns at being happy and being unhappy, and until we clean up our acts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by
the
sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.